Thank you, Vicky. Going old school today without PowerPoints, so you're going to have to listen up rather than just view some of the pictures. The preparation for this week has been a bit of a curious journey for me. Initially, I was thinking, look, we've had a lot of services, a lot of input over Christmas and so on. Just coming up to New Year, maybe something just a bit lighter this Sunday. And I thought, well, I'll focus on the theme we're set for the year, which has been focused on experiencing joy. And it's still 2025, and you would have seen that that was actually our theme for this year. And I'm actually going to still stay with that note about experiencing joy. But the route to get there, to my surprise, has actually been more challenging. The short version is that we experience joy in all circumstances of life when we become aware of the presence of God. Where God is present and at work, there we find peace, there we find joy. Because God's doing something. God is doing what is life-changing. So that's certainly where we're going to hopefully land at the end of the sermon. But then I went to look at the passages to see what theme of joy there is in the passages, and there's actually not much joy in those passages. The first passage from Hebrews tells us about why Jesus became human, why God's Son, to do the work of salvation that Jesus alone uniquely is able to do, required the full divinity of God's Son to take on everything that it means to be human, to take human form entirely. And if Jesus is to represent humanity before God, to build that bridge, it was necessary, Hebrews tells us, that Jesus became fully human and experienced the full gamut of human life and experience. So it talks about how Jesus was tested. The word sometimes is translated tempted, but it's actually, in a stricter sense, has a sense of being tested. And in Hebrews, it actually has a curious phrase. It's unique to Hebrews in the New Testament that talks about Jesus being made perfect. And we often think, well, surely Jesus was perfect as God's Son when he came down into heaven. And as Hebrews used it, it means that Jesus had a job to do. And it's only when he completed that mission, that task, was he made perfect by walking that journey. So the journey was to take on human form, to experience all that he experienced in human life, being obedient to all the tasks that God had given him. The Father had sent him into the world, including his death and his resurrection. Having completed that task, he was made perfect in the sense that he perfectly fulfilled the mission that he was tasked with. And to do so, he needed to be experienced the fullness of human form, human life. So that's the short version of that Hebrews passage. And then we come to the challenge of Matthew 2. Now, Matthew has some information about Jesus' childhood that we only find in Matthew's gospel. Mark and John don't tell us anything about Jesus' childhood. He just appears on the stage once he's in that full adult stage of his ministry. Luke tells us more about the amazing conception and birth of Jesus and the calling of John the Baptist, and we've been focusing on that through Advent. Zachariah's song, John the Baptist preparing the way, and Mary and Elizabeth getting together in their pregnancies, and the birth of these two cousins of John the Baptist and Jesus. Matthew takes us in a different direction, and it highlights in particular the role of Joseph. And the passage we have here has three main themes, but it's also quite striking of how timely these themes are. Now, let me just come back to my notes because it actually says it's not there. Anyway, first page. So in Matthew's gospel, we have this focus on Bethlehem. And we often think about Bethlehem as this sweet village, all at peace, and as a fairly sweet spot to be come into the world. And whilst it was true that in the birth of Jesus, that night, that amazing period, and all that followed, there was a remarkable focus on Jesus being born into Bethlehem, the city of David, the background is actually isn't quite as clear unless we read between the lines a little bit. And the lines are there. Bethlehem was a politically loaded city for Jesus to be born into. The background is that Herod, sometimes called Herod the Great, but Herod, who had come to power as a client king under the Romans, and he had a lot of background where he had shared some education in Rome and other background, was a king so long as he did the Romans' bidding, and he actually had the whole territory under his control. And he was not of the line of David. He knew, being an Idumean, he was only a sort of a quarter blood Jew, if you want to take it in terms of ancestry, and was never recognized as a legitimate king by the Jews, by the Judeans. And the area that he feared the most was someone from the line of King David, who the Jews believe would be where the king would emerge from, would come out of the city of David, out of Bethlehem. Now, Herod was paranoid about power to the extent that he executed three of his sons. So fearful was he that his own sons might try to succeed him. So he was really quite ruthless and paranoid about anyone who could threaten his control. Upon his death, another son emerged, Archelaus, who was just as brutal. A crowd of thousands gathered in Jerusalem to say, it's time for us to have a king who comes from David, from Judea. And Archelaus massacred the crowd of over the thousands in that time. So this was a very brutal time to be living in this world. And the focus in particular on the fear that someone might emerge from Bethlehem of the line of David had to be suppressed. So Bethlehem was under oppression in a big way. Hence, when Herod's plans to kill any possible boy emerging growing out of Bethlehem, it's because of that fear that Herod had at that time. So we have the Saviour of the world, through whom joy to the world, peace is going to come. And the first part of the narrative that Matthew tells us is that he has to flee with his family. It is striking that this Saviour of the world, sent by God, who must experience the fullness of human life, is brought into a world of terror and of violence and quickly becomes a refugee family. So an angel speaks to Joseph in a dream, and the family leave in the midst of the night and flee to Egypt. And that wasn't a neat case of just booking a ticket and out they go on a journey to Egypt. I remember a number of years ago when I was a teenager and hearing about a family, the Lacabio family. And the backstory a little bit is that James Lacabio, who is Ugandan, and was actually one of the senior members of his tribe as a professor at the university, married Sheila Bruce, happened to be F.F. Bruce's daughter. You might know F.F. Bruce is a renowned scholar who's very, very productive. James Lacabio, who and his six children, discovered that his name was on the execution list from Idi Amin. So the family literally didn't tell the children, said we're going off to school, and as they were packing to go off to school, Sheila and the children ran in one direction out of the village, James ran in the other direction out of the village, not knowing whether they would make it out and eventually were able to find themselves out of Uganda and arrived in Sydney. And the one connection that Sheila LaCapio had through the connection with F.F. Bruce was my father. So I remember meeting with my mother, my mother and father, the LaCapio family off a plane with nothing, having arrived from Uganda, literally having run out of the village. Now, these stories aren't just, you know, very occasional things. These types of journeys are happening all around us in the world today. There are more refugees than at any other time of history, and a lot of them involve people literally fleeing. Jesus and his family, as he, for the first 2 years of his life, grew up as a refugee family in Egypt, knew what it was to live in fear, in exile, without family and kin around to support you, and all that came with that. God's Son entered history as one displaced by a brutal regime. And it's in that context that Matthew says, "Out of Egypt I called my son." There's actually a whole echo of it, because in the Old Testament, what happens to the family of Israel, family of Jacob, is that they go to Egypt and flee there because of a famine. So it's a sense in which this is the way in which it has always been for God's people. But what we can note at this stage is that whilst the promises have been made about in and through this baby and the world will be saved and all these wonderful things would happen, that did not come by being shrouded in a place of comfort and safety. Quite the opposite. The first thing that Jesus does is flee from violence. So we often think that if I'm obedient, then God will provide this safety and protection. But it doesn't always occur in those terms. So we have Jesus fleeing, and Jesus having the first 2 years as the life of a refugee in that place of exile. Then we get the return of Jesus to Nazareth. Once he'd heard that Herod had died and the threat, the instruction of all the boys being born out of Bethlehem is no longer there, again an angel speaks to Joseph to say, when you return, don't go back to Bethlehem, which would have been the hometown. That's, if you like, the citizenship of Jesus would have been as a citizen of Bethlehem in terms of his identity. But rather go up to what was then an independent territory of Galilee. And to get to Galilee, you've got to go up around Samaria. And it wasn't under, at that stage, Roman administration. That did happen quite violently before too long, as the Roman general in Syria came down and suppressed violently and burnt villages, destroyed the city of Sepphoris, which was the emerging city of the day, which was just up the road from Nazareth. So again, a place of peril. So the sense that in these times all was peaceful is far from it. You've got a brutal regime of the Romans. You've got the political world of the Herodian family fighting it out between them as to who's going to claim what territory by quite brutal terms. And Archelaus eventually comes and takes over Galilee as well. So it's into that type of world that God's Son has been sent to bring another way, to find hope that doesn't involve gathering another army. Because that was happening at precisely the same time. Another patriot of Israel, whose name was Judas, not the Judas that we know, but another Judas, gathered together an army of about 6,000 men until the governor of Syria came down and totally defeated them and actually crucified them as well. So the world in which Jesus speaks peace is not lightly spoken. It's not sort of coming from a place of comfort, a place of, well, what would you know? You know, you've come from a privileged family. Nazareth, up in Galilee, was renowned as the place where all the hillbilly people came from, the uneducated people came from. The nobodies would actually come out of Nazareth. And there's a strong culture that those in Judea and those in Jerusalem looked down their noses at those hillbilly cousins up north with all their rural ways and so on. So the Nazareans were spoken of in very derogatory terms. Oh, you're one of the Nazareans. Well, that explains it all, doesn't it? You know, the Nazareans, they aren't all there. They're all, you know, wanting. And that is the space where God's salvation emerges. Not out of the elite, not out of the well-educated, not out of the palaces, not out of the politically powerful, not out of the people who are well-connected, but out of an anonymous space. Who's this person coming out of Nazareth? Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Was the cry that was said. Matthew is highlighting this as part of the journey of Jesus. Now, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I was reading a book. The title was totally fine. I was using it as an illustration for how males usually, when you're asked how you're going, yeah, I'm fine, totally fine, I am fine, really. And I told you I was halfway through the book, and yes, the character in the book just escalates in terms of his not being fine at all until he finally admits it. I'm not recommending that particular book. It's a very much of a genre. However, in preparation for this week, I came across an article, first of all, that had a link to a book by a scholar I hadn't heard called Joan Taylor. She's a professor in King's College, London. And she's written a book, which I've now downloaded. I've read the first chapter, so it has to be okay, on the childhood of Jesus. And she uses the background and said, what would it have looked like to have been a refugee in Egypt? What would it have looked like to have actually been in that precinct of Bethlehem with all the concerns and all the oppression it was experiencing? What would it have looked like to have gone up into Nazareth? And she paints a much more compelling picture of the childhood of Jesus growing up in that space, aware that one step out of line can bring a harsh, not just punishment, but even death in that sort of very brutal world. The point being that we need to hear that God has, what one bishop, David Shepherd, Bishop of Liverpool, described as a bias towards the poor and the vulnerable. Not only does God see refugees, and not only does God see refugee families and refugee children and those who are fleeing terrorism and those who have been subject to terror and are grieving because of the result of it, because it is just awful, because it is just evil. God not only sees it, but has entered that space. The light that emerges in a darkness comes out of a very dark space. And there we find hope. There we find light. And there we eventually find joy. But it is not an easy route. The takeaway I would suggest as we reflect on this is that God never promises immunity from problems in life. God never says, become a Christian, trust me, and everything's going to all come together. It's all going to be a triumph. The triumph for Jesus was fleeing out of a place of persecution. And there was no shortcut for that route. Jesus needed to learn it. And we need to recognize that when things don't always go right, we shouldn't be protesting to God to say, oh, hang on, you said if I follow you, everything's going to be fine. It actually never has been that way. And God has never said, I will keep you immune from the problems and the sufferings of life. If anything, if you stand up for my name as a Christian, you can expect that it'll be extra hard because people who don't like me won't like you as a result. And if people don't like what I stand for, then they'll push back against you as well. So we come to discover that the Christian journey of taking up our cross isn't just putting up with an annoying uncle or aunt from occasionally. We say, oh, gosh, they're a real struggle. It's more about recognising that following in the way of Christ can involve some similar journeys out of our comforts into very challenging space. Where we discover joy is not so much that everything is peaceful and calm. It's more knowing that in the midst of the tumults of life, God is present with us, not at a distance. The one theme that Matthew really highlights over against the other Gospels, who all have their own themes, is the name of Emmanuel, God with us. God is not remote in a comfort zone, sort of controlling things, but God has entered into this world, walked in that space, and continues to be present through the working of his Spirit. Where do we find joy? Not as some experience of some sort of, something we can consume, or the best sort of alcohol, best sort of wine, or whatever it may be. That can be fun, but that's not joy. Where we find joy is when we recognize God is present in our life. God is here in our midst as we gather. God is present when we come forward to communion and is speaking to us, is engaging with us, renewing his promise, his pledge to us. And as we discover on a daily basis that God is present, as we go into the reality of whatever the next week has for us, at our side, even within us through his Spirit, there we discover joy. God with us is a profound sense that God is not at a distance, as the song said a couple of decades ago now, but God who said, no, I'm not at a distance. I'm right at your side, and I'm never going to leave you. Amen.
Friends, can I invite